Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to your Indy Free Zone, your Olympic Free Zone, and into the Sports Zone.
That's it. I'm leaving.
And once again, another goal accomplished.
Happy to be assistants there for you.
You're the one that just quit, not me.
I didn't say I quit. I just said I was leaving. Did you hear that noise out in State College? That was a huge cheer going up here in the Valley.
Love you like a brother.
Sometimes too much like a brother.
Okay. A lot to talk about today. Looking forward to it very much as we roll through the show. And revisiting the topic we discussed yesterday. I want to get to something very quickly. I was talking about positioning of fielders yesterday and that Major League Baseball should pass a rule, or baseball should pass a rule, and this would have to go all the way, filter all the way down through to the minor leagues as well. That I believe, as Tom Verducci suggested, I believe that you should only have two fielders on the left side, two fielders on the right side, and that's it. Now, you're saying, well, that takes away strategy. Well, first of all, if you know the game and you really know the game, okay, what I'm about to tell you is not a surprise. And to those of you, maybe this will be a learning. You already have rules that restrict movement in the game to begin with as to where your fielders are allowed to be. There are already rules. Right? Dominic Brown, for example, say the Phillies are playing in Oakland. And the reason I picked Oakland is that it is the Oakland Coliseum has the largest foul territory of any in Major League Baseball. It's not even close. Well, Dominic Brown is not, say you have a dead pull hitter. I mean, no matter what, there's no way this guy is going to hit the ball to right field. Okay? No way. So you take your right fielder, you put him in center field, you put your center fielder, put him in left, and you line up Dominic Brown in foul territory. You can't do that. Under the rules of baseball, it is not allowed. That would be a balk. You're like, a balk? That only a pitcher can balk. No, believe it or not, fielders can balk. Catcher can balk. All right?
Yeah, if the catcher sets up outside the catcher's box, for instance, where the pitch
is balk.
It's a balk.
It's a balk. So you already have rules in place, for example, that you cannot just freely line up anywhere in the park. You cannot line up in foul territory. It's a balk. So all of your fielders must be within the confines of the lines. The only player that's allowed to line up in foul territory is the catcher. And the catcher's restricted to the box. And it really becomes evident as to what they can and can't do when you have an intentional walk. The catcher is not allowed to leave the box until the pitch is released by the pitcher. If the catcher were to stand outside and say, okay, I'm just going to stand here, you throw me four pitches, he's going to walk, you're not allowed to do that. That also is a balk. So you already have rules in place that say what fielders, where they can and can't line up. In the infield, it should be mandated two to the left and two to the right of the bag. Enough of the shifting. It is very much like when the NHL decided to get rid of the trap. I mean, the trap at mid-ice was strangling the National Hockey League. Jacques Lemaire is the one that put it in. He had it with the Devils. He used it briefly when he was the head coach of the Minnesota Wild. And Jacques Lemaire, under the rules, did exactly what he thought was best for his team to win. Well, the trap was killing the game. And now you watch the NHL. Last night, the first overtime between the Kings and the Blackhawks. Now remember, the period's 20 minutes, and they played the full first overtime because the game was not won until the second overtime. Do you know how long it took to play 20 minutes of hockey last night?
No, I didn't get a chance to watch it. I couldn't stay up.
26 minutes. That's amazing. It took 26 minutes to play 20 minutes of hockey. That's it. And when you look at baseball, already has catcher must be in the box. Catcher cannot catch a ball. In other words, you can't line up outside the box. No fielder can line up in foul territory except for the catcher. If you do, that's a balk. So if you already have rules in place that restrict the movement of a position, catcher, and restrict the movement of anyone else in terms of lining up in foul territory, they can put in a rule restricting two left and two right. I mean, just like the NFL, I mean, the Steelers were ripped off in terms of getting into the NFL playoffs because they should have had a re-kick because the NFL has a rule as to how many should be to the left and the right of the football. Okay, I mean, Penn State got penalized this year in football because they had too many guys to one side of the not enough guys to one side of the kickoff. They only had three on one side, and they had seven on the other of the kicker. Well, that's not the rule. So you have rules about placement of individuals all over the place, and I think the shift is killing offense in baseball. It's not pitchers. It's the shift. You're seeing five to six batters in a lineup shifted on, whether they're lefty or righty. And I think, if you're going to cheat as far as you can to get them there, I don't want baseball to be like a beer league softball game and have a short fielder. That's what it comes down to. I think it's a great idea. I know you're stunned.
I'm just a listener along with.
Yeah.
Actually, the rules that you were talking about earlier, I've known for a long, long time.
Well, I know you have.
It goes with being an umpire.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I know you know. But I mean,
not. The catcher's rule is one that a lot of people don't realize, that there is a catcher's box. Now, it's not always drawn out on the field, but there is right. There is a catcher's box.
Well, the point I'm trying to make with that is that there are already rules in place that limit positioning to begin with. Okay, the pitcher can only throw from the slab. Okay? Pitcher cannot throw from in between first and second. Can't throw between pitcher's mound and home plate. They must throw from the slab. The catcher can only be in the box before the ball is released. Okay? Can't line up in foul territory. You already have rules that limit positional movement to begin with.
Yeah, this wouldn't be new.
So this would be a new rule, but it is not out of the realm of, I can't blame managers for doing it. The managers are trying to do whatever they can to win. Just like Jacques Lemaire, when he put the trap in the NHL, was doing whatever he could with limited offensive personnel to put his team in a position to win, like keeping the score down. Okay? Well, good. And that's how he did win, by keeping the score. You have to do what you think you can do. In the NBA, if you think you need to somehow ratchet the game down and get the game because that gives you the best chance of winning because you can't beat a team in a shootout, which I understand, fine. NFL, same thing. Some teams run the football, want to control the clock. Some teams want to be wide open. They want to take their offensive line out of it, so they run the run and shoot, spread offense, whatever you want to call it, because it really negates the offensive line and what they can and they can't do. Okay, you're just trying to find ways to win. Well, in baseball, you're seeing shift after shift after shift because managers are doing whatever they can to win the game within the rules, and it's within the rules to do it. I'm saying change the rule.
And you have
it'll
to work.
More off, you have put to, more offense into the game.
You have to word it right, though, Steve, because if you word it as you must have two players on each side of the field, left and right, with second base being the center, then I think you're okay. Because if you say you can only have two players on the left or right of second base, two infielders on the left or right of second base, then you're going to have guys putting their shortstop right on the under, or right behind the second base bag. So it has to be worded right too.
Yeah, but what you're finding now is the shortstop is over about 10, 15 feet to the right of it.
Yeah, he's playing second base, literally.
Right. So, I mean, you're not going to keep him a traditional first, second, short, and third look, traditional spot. But you are going to, you know, basically say, hey, you know, in other words, the edges of the bag, you cannot, if you stray into the edge of the bag in terms of an imaginary line, you're not crossed over the line. And if it's an illegal shift, it brings with it an automatic ball. Or if it's really bad, then it's an automatic walk.
That's what I was thinking. If the umpires catch it the way they should, in other words, wait till a pitch is thrown, then call the illegal defense, and then call it a ball, that works.
Right. Now, how do you enforce this? Well, it all begins in spring training. You take spring training, you sacrifice those games, where especially in the first 2 weeks, where you just basically send a message, this is how you play the game. Okay? You enforce rule 6.02, 12 seconds. All right, I think that one's the batter's box. 8.04 is the 12-second rule. And in spring training, that's where you enforce it.
You'll get a kick out of this. I shared the 12-second rule with the senior division baseball team I help out with. Now, that's 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old kids. These guys have been playing baseball an awful lot, and they've watched a lot of baseball.
By the way, young Daniel had the game-winning hit in game one last night.
He did. Not quite as good in game two, but he was very happy at the end of game one. But I shared that 12 seconds, and the one kid just looked at me with the blank look, and he goes, it's more like 24 at least. I said, it's exactly right. He said, that's a rule in the rule book? I said, yeah. He said, somebody may want to try and call that next time around. And he's exactly right. That's the problem. You know, that particular part of the game has slowed down the game so much that that age group just doesn't watch games on TV.
Tell them to watch Max Scherzer or Mark Burley. Those two guys do a great job of getting the ball and getting it done.
I went up and down the lineup on our bench the one inning, or in between games, actually, and I said, how many of you guys have seen a game from beginning to end on TV in the last week? Nothing. In the last month, nothing. So far this year, I got a few hands. Now, those are the guys that watch from beginning to end. Now, when I said, how many of you have seen a game, everybody raised their hand.
Of course, yeah. And a lot of people do that. They'll pick up two innings here and there and enjoy it and the whole deal. Watching an entire game is not easy. That takes a lot of commitment to do something like that. I mean, look, the goal is not to get the game in a get the ball throw. Look, if I sit here for 12 seconds and say nothing, okay, I'm going to sit here 12 seconds starting right now. You mean you can't deliver a pitch in 12 seconds with nobody on base? That was 12 seconds. Felt longer than you realized, didn't it? Power of radio.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome. Great to have you with us. Spider Caldwell is retiring, sort of. Now, I know there are cynics out there. They're saying, uh-oh, there's another one from the old regime. I'm sure you're wondering if there's anything more to it than just him leaving. I can tell you in no uncertain terms, there is no more to it than just him leaving. Spider's been here for 31 years. Tim Shope was the equipment manager for 40 years at Penn State, and then Shope finally retired at the end of the 2000 season. And Spider had been his assistant the entire time, and then Spider ascended to the top spot. And Spider, he and his wife, Karen, and Spider's overcome so much in his life. Remarkable story. And Spider has a place in Vermont. Log cabin that he and his wife Karen built up there on a lake. I've seen so many pictures of this in my lifetime. Gorgeous, you know, beautiful, beautiful home, beautiful setting on the lake. It's gorgeous. So, Dan Norman is the football coach at Whitehaven High School. Or no, it's Fairhaven. Fairhaven High School in Vermont, just north of Rutland. And he comes down here and works at the Penn State football camp every year. Well, Spider is a place right near the high school and the whole deal. So, he gets to know him and talks to him because, you know, they have something in common. And every once in a while, he says, yeah, you know, hey, if there's ever a job opening up there, he says, hey, you know what? He says, hey, we got the cabin, the whole thing. You know, we love it up there. We would consider moving there. Well, it turned out that the current athletic director at that high school has always wanted to be a softball coach. And there's a small college up there, not UVM, but a small college up there that had an opening for a softball coach. And this guy got the job, which is great for him. It's what he's always wanted to do. But it also meant the athletic director's job was open at the high school. And they immediately said, you know, hey, we get on to Penn State every year, and Spider always talks about, you know, living up here and the whole deal. Let's see if he's interested. So they called him up. He went up there, he interviewed, they offered him the job right away. And he took it. And he and his wife are thrilled. I mean, he's apprehensive. You know, it's a new job. He's going to miss here. But he starts the job on July 1st. I think his last day here is the 13th of June on that Friday. And he starts July 1st. He was telling me today about how he's, you know, that he's never been to his home up there during the fall. I said, well, I said, it's going to be incredible when you get up late September, early October, and you see all those maple trees around that lake turned. I said, your drive into the school, I mean, it's going to blow you away. He goes, oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I said, now, I said, you're also going to get blown away in January and February. I said, for a different reason. He says, yeah. He says, but you know what? He says, I'm going to have my touch of home. I said, well, what's that? He says, the truck has Sirius in it. He says, I'm going to get you and Jack. He said, and Dick and you on games. He said, I'll still be connected. I said, there you go. So he's decided to do this on his own. He is one of the great survival stories ever. He is one of the hardest workers I've ever seen in my lifetime. Being the equipment manager and in charge of all the managers, in terms of setting up facilities, setting up practice fields, you know, to the specifications that the coaches need, and the constant movement that happens during the course of a practice, beyond just making sure the players have their needs taken care of in terms of uniform and workout gear and things like that. They take care of all of that. They are hardworking, 16-hour-a-day individuals, you know, 7 days a week during the season. But the best thing about Brad is, Spider, if you don't like Spider Caldwell, you cannot possibly like people. He's one of the five best individuals I've ever met in my lifetime. A very, very special guy. And I hope he and Karen, you know, enjoy all those years up there and so forth. And I know if I get up to Vermont, which would be possible because the Spikes play at Centennial Field up at UVM. And I've done a series up there before. I would definitely do a series up there to spend some time, you know, spend a couple days with him. Yeah. And Karen is, you know, you think about the various things, for example, you know, people don't realize that in a 24-hour turnaround before the final home game with Wisconsin, they made the decision to put 42s on all the helmets. Who do you think put the 42s on the helmets? You know, people have kind of made fun of the fact when they finally put names on the jersey, some of them weren't quite, you know, completely sewn on, falling off a bit, whatever. You know, Spider's wife did that herself, and the reason she did it herself was because the decision was made so late to do it that they needed people working on it the entire... They didn't go to Nike and get it done. It was too late. It was too late. So, Spider laid it out. Karen busted her backside, did the best she could. Naturally, of course, you got some people making fun of it. That's okay. You know, that's the nature, unfortunately, of today's society. We make fun of everything now. You know, we make fun of other people's hard work and, you know, when they kind of have, you know, their back against the wall trying to get something done quickly. But that's okay. You've never walked a mile in their shoes. I get it. Yeah. Nobody walks any miles in anybody's shoes anymore, it seems. But he has decided to retire from Penn State, but not retire. He's going to take another job and be an athletic director. So there you go. Kevin, last night in a baseball game, I guess chewed out young umpires about pitchers coming to a set position. Well, what's that about?
I did not chew anybody out. I just explained that It's something
listen,
that isn't called
now
enough.
Listen, now listen to the emotion which with you're attacking me. This is what he did to those young kids last night.
It's something that needs to be stressed, and I wanted to make sure they knew the rule.
Well,
I took it upon myself to explain it.
I have to tell you this story. I was coaching. It was Little League. Yeah, it wasn't Babe Ruth. It was Little League.
No, wait. Hold on. You can't just jump into a story. I mean, you just can't jump into a story out of nothing. Because, you know, we do have story time with Steve.
I was coaching one of those Little League teams where it was a nightly struggle. But I like those kids so much. They're great kids. Well, the opposing team, with nobody out, loads the bases. And so, kid hits a pop-up straight up in the air, and my first baseman doesn't have to move at all. Now, that is the pure definition of the infield fly rule. Now, the infield fly rule was put into effect to protect the runners and to keep them out of being in no man's land. Well, the first baseman waits for it and drops the ball. Now, naturally, at this point, what was a hallmark of this team was that it then became a fire drill. The ball thrown all over the place, and four guys score. And they're all jumping up and down. There was one out. Okay,
and I'm assuming no infield fly rule was called.
Right.
Okay.
So they're all jumping up and down. The kid that hit the pop-up says, I hit a grand slam. I hit a grand slam. Now, I'm managing the other team. I am not even remotely angry or, like, remotely anything. So I walk out to the umpire, who I've known for a while, and I said, Bill, shouldn't there be two outs? Well, no, there's just one out. I said, well, Bill, I said, wasn't that the infield fly rule? He says, the what? I said, wasn't that the infield fly rule? He goes, explain that to me.
Oh, boy.
I said, sure. I said, if you have runners on first and second or the base is loaded, I said, with no outs or one out, I said, if a ball is hit in the air in the infield or relatively close to the infield and can be easily caught by the infielder, the batter is declared to be automatically out and the runners advance at their own risk. I said, now the rule is put in, Bill, I said, to protect the three runners that were just on base so that my guy doesn't deliberately drop it and then suddenly, you know, and suddenly we pull a triple play or a double play. In this case, it would have been a double play. There was one out. He looks at me and he says, huh, really? And the other coach comes out and he goes, is there a problem? I said, nah, I was just explaining to Billy infield fly rule. I said, he goes, oh, what about it? I said, well, I said, no offense. I said, but that was the pure definition of it. I said, your batter should be out. He goes, oh. And I explained it to him. He goes, yeah. I said, and the kid's like, I look over the kid's high five. I hit a grand slam. He's still doing it. He's telling his parents the whole thing. I said, but you know what? I said, why don't we just leave that for another day? I walked back to the dugout. I looked at the other coaches. I said, we're going to lose. All right, so.
Some days lose. You just know it's stacked against you.
It's like, when you walk out to an umpire and you explain the rule to a T, and they look at you and go,
Game over.
I'm dead.
That is the one rule that I made it a point to almost memorize verbatim from the Little League rule book, because you run into it more times at that division than you do anywhere else. With runners on first and second, or first, second, and third, with less than two outs, a batter hits a fly ball that can be caught by an infielder with a reasonable amount of effort. The umpire shall then call infield fly rule. The batter is out, and the runners can advance at their own risk.
Yeah. Well, they actually, that was what made it interesting, was that that year in our league, that was a point of emphasis. And Sam Gardner, and Sam's the president of Gardner Candies, okay, down in Tyrone. Sam Phillips is, I mean, he's an umpire here in the league. And yeah, Sam's good friends with Tommy John and the whole thing. And one of the great guys and an awesome umpire, okay? So we had this coaches meeting at the beginning of the year, and Sam was running the coaches meeting. And he says, I want to explain the infield fly rule. This is that season. He said, I want Steve Jones to explain it. So I explained it. He goes, exactly, that's exactly right. So now it's 5 weeks into the season. It happens to my team. I have an umpire look at me and go, really? Really?
See, the only experience, the only two experiences I ever had with the infield fly rule were, I called it one time, and I mean I called it. You could hear it from basically anywhere in town, because I wanted to make sure it was heard, and everybody kind of froze. And this was like before, 11, 12, 13 year olds. This was like 9 and 10 year olds. And the one coach came up to me and goes, yeah, that was the right call. We don't call that in this league. I said, oh, but we just did there. He goes, no, that's fine. And we moved on. And then the only other one is there was a question about it with the shortstop on what was, I agree, a in-between from a humpback liner and a fly ball. It was one of those just very, very fine lines. And he catches it in short right or short left field. And I called infield fly. He goes, wasn't that a humpback liner? I said, well, I was going to get out my protractor and try and see what the arc and angle of it was, but I felt that I just better just call something. And I played the safe rule. And he goes, okay. Those are the toughest ones on infield fly, because an infielder can make the catch, and he can actually make the catch in left field if he sets up underneath it. That's still a reasonable amount of effort if he has time to camp out. But the other question on the infield fly rule is, how high does the ball need to be? It's always my interpretation that if he has to catch the ball above his head, then it's high enough for an infield fly rule. But it doesn't say anything about how high the fly has to be. Think about that one.
I probably won't. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Yes, baseball rules. Talking about that. And evidently, Kevin now admits he went out trying to get himself thrown out of the game last night.
I did not.
Yeah, what did you tell the manager when you went out?
I said, listen, I said, let me handle this. I said, let me talk to him. I said, better that I get thrown out than you do.
Obviously, you thought you were going to get thrown out. So, I mean,
that's
look.
Not that. No, you're twisting that slightly.
Twisting what?
I said, it's better that I get thrown out as opposed to you get thrown out. That doesn't mean I had intent of getting thrown out of the game.
I'm here praising the restraint of young umpires.
Oh, brother.
Who, with your wrath coming down on them like a ton of bricks.
I'm going to stop talking to you during breaks.
I mean, what's next? Insurance fraud? Oh, wait, we dealt with that last week.
Not talking to you during breaks anymore.
Another goal achieved. One of these days, we're going to record the break and play it back.
Ooh, we.
Oh, I can record it here.
Yeah, that's true. You can, can't you? Yeah, I forgot.
I can record the break. The stories I have to hear.
There's this year's Christmas Day special.
Your respect for me will grow exponentially. Oh, really? Is that what he has to
Yep, that's a preview of the Christmas Day special if I ever heard one.
He turned laps at 228.5 today. I mean, unbelievable.
What's coming up in the next hour, Steven?
Why Harrisburg is going to bid for the Olympics.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be a disaster.
Think of all the new venues we'd have to use.
Yeah, like a velodrome in Shamokin.
I like your thinking. Let me get the mayor on the phone line.
Please do. Would you build a velodrome in Shamokin if it meant getting the Olympics?
Yep. Oh, you were. That was rhetorical. Sorry.
I was talking about people who are responsible in life.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.